Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 169. I'm recording it on Monday, September 21st, 2009. The PE10 level today is 19. That's not too exciting for stockholders, for people thinking of buying stocks. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The title of the selection, Feeling Good. The title of the podcast is The Stock Return Predictor. I want to record, there are four investing calculators at the PassionSaving.com site, the Stock Return Predictor, the Retirement Risk Evaluator, the Investor's Scenario Surfer, and the Investment Strategy Tester. And I'm very proud of these calculators. I developed them with huge assistance of John Walter Russell. Perhaps the proper way to say it is that John Walter Russell developed them with a wee bit of assistance from Rob Bennett. John, you have to give John the lion's share of the credit on these calculators. He does all the statistical work. I ask all the annoying questions, and I come up with the jazzy titles. That's pretty much the way the partnership works. It's a pretty good partnership. John's website, you should check out, is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. I think these calculators are knock your socks off tools. They're powerful stuff. And in 2010, I'm going to make an effort to publicize them a bit and get some more people. There should be millions of people using these calculators. And my biggest problem in recent years has been just I've had a flood of material to create because of all the exciting insights we've developed in the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Board communities over the past 7 years. And I just haven't had time to do marketing. It's just, you know, I'm a content guy at heart. It's hard to make the break, but I have to do it because the calculators don't help anybody if people don't see them. But these calculators are all unique. There are no other calculators like them elsewhere on the internet. And the one that I am proudest of, the others are more sophisticated, but I'm a basics guy. And the basic tool that you need to practice valuation-informed indexing, the strategy recommended at the website is the Stock Return Predictor. The purpose of this podcast is to give a description of how the Stock Return Predictor works, what it is and how it works, and how to go about using it. And then I'll provide a link at the calculator page so that people who are new to the calculator will have a podcast to turn to get background, and hopefully that will help some people learn how to use the calculator. This calculator is not complicated. Some of the others are a little bit. I don't think any of them are incredibly complicated, but the strategy tester is a little bit complicated, and even the investment scenario surfer is if you've never used it before. The retirement risk evaluator is, I think, fairly intuitive, and the stock return predictor, I think, is fairly intuitive. But it's so important that I do want to take the time to record a podcast so that people have some help. And if you've never used it before, you may not know what it is because you're not going to see a lot of write-ups in the general media today about this calculator. I hope that in days to come, you will. My view is, I'm just going to explain a little bit. I'm first going to explain the importance of the calculator and then the theory by which it was developed, which is both of them are fairly simple, but they need to be said, so you're grounded in what's going on. When you buy a car or a house or a comic book or a banana, there are two steps to the process. It's a two-step process, making a purchase. Step one is, do I want this item? So if you're thinking of buying a car, the first thing you would do is you know, maybe go to Consumer Reports or talk to your friends or go to the internet and maybe order some brochures and get a list of all the cars out there and narrow it down to the ones that serve you. You know, maybe you want a family car. Maybe you want a sports car. You know, maybe you want a van, a utility van. There's all sorts of options. Maybe you want a two-door. Maybe you want a four-door. Narrow it. Maybe you're in a certain price range. So narrow it down to the car that's right for you. And that's roughly 50% of the job of buying a car. And in terms of, you know, when it comes to buying stocks, there's lots of good information out there as to whether stocks are for you or not. You know, not everybody should be buying stocks. Some people should be buying CDs or TIPS or I-bonds or bonds or real estate, gold, whatever. There's material out there to address that first step of the two-step process. But there's very little, especially from the conventional investing experts, on the second question. And the second question of any buying situation is, what price can I get? In other words, first you want to find out, is this for me? You know, and then you find the car. You know, it's a, you know, a Volvo. You decide you want a Volvo. And you know what color you want. You know what model you want. You know what year you want. And you go to dealers, and then you try to find a good price. Well, that is the part that is left out in the passive investing model. There's no discussion of what price. You know, it's one thing to say stocks are good for you, and for most of us, I think stocks are a very good investment class. But at what price? There's no such thing as an investment class that is good at any price. That's absurd. There has to be a price at which stocks are no longer a good deal for you. When the price gets too high, the risk is out of control, and it may not be suitable for you. So you have to find out. Well, how do you find out? That's what the stock return predictor tells you. The stock return predictor is essentially the price tag for index investors. It doesn't give you the price of individual stocks. It gives you the price of a broad index, the S&P index. It could be used for the Dow, any broad index that's going to work, because the broad indexes are going to, I mean, you know, they're generally going to be overvalued to the same extent, roughly. It's designed to be used for a purchase of the S&P index. So what the return predictor tells you, it's not one little niche thing. It's what it tells you is 50% of what you need to know to invest effectively. And it's the 50% that is ignored everywhere else. So it's unlikely you know about it. So I think the return predictor is just essential. I will state it as strongly as it can be stated. I would not put $100 into a purchase of stocks without first consulting the stock return predictor or some equivalent tool. And there is no other good equivalent tool available today that I know of. So pretty much you have to consult the return predictor. Now, my hope, I guess I like having an exclusive, that's nice, but my hope, if our economy is to come out of this crisis at some point, we need to have thousands of stock return predictors. I will state it strongly. If you are giving investment advice, you should have a calculator of this nature at the website where you're offering it. There should be, and I don't say that everyone should be using the stock return predictor. What should be happening is Motley Fool should have their own stock return predictor. Morningstar should have their own stock return predictor. Every site on the internet should have their own. Whenever they report the Dow or the S&P for the day, the closing number, they should be reporting the valuation adjusted number as well. And to get that number, you would just plug in to the return predictor and you could obtain that number with a little math. You need to know not just that stocks are good or bad. You need to know, if they're bad, of course, you don't need to look at the predictor. But if you determine that stocks are a good investment choice for you, the next step, and it's an essential step, is to determine whether stocks are currently selling at a price that is suitable for you. That's what the return predictor tells you. I think the development of the return predictor, co-development with John Russell, may be the most important thing, the most important work I've ever done, and it's work that I more or less stumbled into, But we got involved in this great debate, and we just kept mining the data for insights, and eventually it hit me one day. I mean, it hit both of us, but we sort of conversed back and forth. And, you know, I said, holy moly, you know, we could develop a tool here that would tell people when stocks are a good long-term buy and when they are not. And it's just so incredible to think this doesn't exist. It was just sitting there, waiting to be developed. All right, that's my pitch for the importance of the predictor. Now, let me explain what it is. I call it the stock return predictor. If I were being totally precisely accurate about the name, I would probably call it the stock return reporter. It's more a reporter than it is a predictor. The reason I use the phrase predictor is because it's a little more jazzy. For marketing purposes, I think it sounds a little better to call it the stock return predictor. But in truth, what it really tells you is not... I mean, does it tell the future? It does, and it doesn't. The stock return predictor tells the future in the sense in which a weather report tells the future. People will ask me, critics, they will say, oh, Rob, you got a crystal ball, you know the future. Well, does the weatherman have a crystal ball? The weatherman doesn't have a crystal ball. What's he doing? What he's doing is there are scientists who have examined weather patterns. I don't know what they look at, humidity and wind patterns and, you know, all this sort of thing. And looking at these data points, they are able to assign percentage odds to various outcomes. So they will tell you, tomorrow, 50% chance it's going to rain. You know, Wednesday, 80% chance. Thursday, 10% chance. Now, another thing critics say, they'll say, oh, Rob, it doesn't give you exact. You can't tell me exactly what the S&P is going to be. Well, I can't. What the return predictor tells you are probabilities. That's just what the weatherman does. That's because when you're trying to do this sort of thing accurately, you can't give exact numbers. So, you know, people go to two extremes. Some people say, well, you can't predict anything. So you just might as well invest passively. Just pretend that valuations don't matter. You know, and hope somehow you survive, even though no one ever has before who did that. That's not for me. But the other extreme is people say, oh, you have to predict out to four decimal places or there's no value in this. You know, I'm not gonna go with just percentage, probabilities. Well, sorry, Charlie, but that's not the way it works. We developed a calculator that is analytically valid, statistically valid, and to be statistically valid, we simply can't. A lot of people would like to know precise numbers. That's what they want. They want to know precise times when stocks are going to go up or down. They want to know precise numbers, how much. And that can't be told. But there's a lot of evidence, a mountain of evidence, that what we do in the predictor can be told. And that is knowing the valuation level, the PE 10 level. PE 10 is the price of the index over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. That's the most useful valuation metric that we were able to find. Knowing that, you can predict what the return on stocks, on the purchase of a stock index will be 10 years out in the future, or 20 years, or 30 years, or we actually go all the way out to 60 years. But the important numbers are the 10-year numbers, the 20-year numbers, and the 30-year numbers. Because after 30 years, the variations are not that great. But at 10 years, the variations are very great. So the 10-year numbers are the most important numbers. So what the return predictor tells you is, I mean, I cannot overstate this claim, I don't think. It tells you what return you're going to obtain from stocks. This is the holy grail, people. It's truly amazing. It doesn't tell you, as I say, with precision. But it tells you what your return's going to be at the time you're putting money down on the table. So you don't have to invest blindly anymore. Using the return predictor, you can get a pretty good sense of how you're going to do 10 years from now. Now, the number one caveat about the return predictor is it does not tell you how things are going to go in 6 months or a year or 2 years or 3 years. Doesn't do it. It can't be done, I don't believe. I won't go into why. Listen to the other podcast. I discuss it extensively in lots of podcasts, why long-term timing is possible and not short-term. But long-term timing does work. Long-term, we can know what return we're going to get from the purchase of a broad index. And it's incredible to me. It's mind-blowing to me that there aren't thousands of websites that provide that information to investors. And the primary reason, I believe, is that the stock selling industry doesn't want us to know. If middle-class investors learn when stocks are a good buy and when stocks are not a good buy, not a lot of us aren't going to buy when they're a poor long-term value proposition. And the stock selling industry likes it just fine that we're in the dark and that we keep buying stocks even though the long-term value proposition is horrible. When you're giving investing advice, you should be giving it to the investors, not to the industry. Investors need this information, and I think in the long term, it's in the best interest of the industry for people to have it. That's my opinion, my strongly held opinion. So I think the future of investing is valuation-informed index, or the future of indexing is valuation-informed indexing. The future of understanding how investing works is rational investing, not passive investing. And the stock return predictor is the key essential tool to take us there, to take us to the future of investing, in Rob Bennett's belief. How do we put it together? It's simple. It's not a complicated tool. The return predictor, as I say, it's really a reporter. What it's telling you is how stocks will perform in 10 years, presuming that stocks perform in the future somewhat as they have always performed in the past. All it's doing is looking at what has always happened in the historical record and saying, this is what's going to happen in the next 10 years, presuming that that holds true. There's no guarantee it's going to hold true. That, you know, we could get blown up by an atom bomb or something. I mean, you know, pray that we don't, but it could happen. And obviously the returns reported in the predictor are not going to apply. Or we could enter a new golden age of the United States as the king of the world, and stocks will provide returns greater than they've ever provided in the past, and the return predictor numbers will be wrong. But those things could happen. But for a long time, the long-term average return on stocks has been 6.5% real. That number goes back as far as we have data, really. And that's the assumption of the predictor. The assumption is that that number is going to continue to apply. If you don't believe it, you can adjust the numbers. If you're a pessimist and you think the U.S. has seen its best days, subtract something from the numbers provided by the predictor. If you're an optimist and you think our best days are ahead of us, add something to the numbers in the calculator. The calculator still has value if you're an optimist or a pessimist. Just adjust the numbers, that's all. But my job isn't to adjust the numbers. My job isn't to say I'm an optimist or I'm a pessimist. My job is to just play it straight. Just report the facts. Neutral. That's what the predictor aims to do. It just aims to report the facts. How will stocks perform in the future in the event that they perform in the future somewhat as they have always performed in the past? In the past, valuations have always affected long-term returns, so the predictor assumes that will continue to be the case. Therefore, in order to make the predictor work, you need to do one thing. You need to enter in a box the PE10 level that applies at the time you're thinking of buying stocks. Now, it would be helpful as you're listening. The purpose of this podcast is to help people trying to use the calculator. So you can listen to my words if you want without having the calculator handy, but it obviously would be helpful if you pulled up the calculator. And as I speak, I may be making reference to some things in the calculator. Well, the only thing you really have to do, as I say, this is a pretty darn simple calculator. There's only one place where you have to enter anything. Everything else is done for you. And that box is, if you're trying to find the calculator, by the way, it's on the left-hand side of every page at the website, passionsaving.com. The left-hand side of every page is a section called Return Predictor. Just click there, and you'll go to the calculator. And below the calculator, there are some articles at the bottom of the page that are linked. And those articles will provide helpful information as well. The purpose of the podcast is to provide, well, the information in those articles in verbal form, and then I supplement it with, you know, whatever seems hot to me today. So the only thing you have to enter to make this calculator work is a P10 level. You have to know the P10 level. Now, you don't have to know. If all you want to know is what the most likely 10-year return on stocks is today, you don't have to even enter that, because we've set it up so that the default read on the calculator are the numbers that apply at today's P10 level. We update it. We don't update it every day, but we update it when there's a significant change in the P10 level. So today the P10 level is 19, which is a little on the high side, and that number's already in there. That number's already in the calculator, and so you don't have to do a thing. If you just pull up that page, it will, underneath, there's a graphic that has color bars for the various time periods, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and 60 years. And then underneath, there's a table of results. And the table will tell you, if you look under 10-year percentage returns, and you look under most likely, that's the most likely 10-year return starting today on a purchase of the S&P index, 3.47. So your most likely 10-year return today is 3.5%. That's an annualized real return. That means that's the return you are likely to get every year for 10 years, annualized. That's a real number. So if you counted inflation, it might be, you know, 3 points higher than that or something like that. 3.5 basically for the next 10 years. That's not a great return for stocks, because stocks are a risky asset class. I don't know what you can get in a super safe asset class today. My guess is something around 2. So stocks are giving you 1.5 extra return. But in exchange for that, you're taking on the risk of enduring a stock crash. I think it's likely we're going to see another stock crash over the next few years. So I question whether that 3.5 is high enough to justify a big stock investment. I think you should probably have some money in stocks. But I personally wouldn't be going with a big allocation at these prices. But it's not horrible. It's a better number than we had from 1996 through 2008, that's for sure. So it's an improvement, but it's still a little dicey. But where do we get that number? As I say, it's just a regression analysis. A regression analysis is a tool that statisticians use. And all it really is doing is it's a way of mathematically finding a correlation between two things. And the correlation that we're looking for here is the PE10 level, which is the valuation level of stocks at a starting point, and the return that applies X number of years out. And that's it. And all we did was John does all the statistical work. All we did was we determined what the correlation is by looking at the historical data. And you just develop formulas, and those formulas are, you know, they're in the calculator, and you press a button and the formulas apply. So if you want to know what the likely return is at today's P10 level, you don't have to do anything. It's just there for you. But you might be wondering, you might say, well, I think stocks are going to fall. I think they're going to fall 50%. So plug in, you know, just change that number. Instead of a 19 PE10, plug in 10, you know, for a drop of about 50%, and then hit calculate. And the calculator will redo the numbers, and you will see if valuations fall in half over the next couple of years, then what will your 10-year return will be? And look, holy moly, most likely 10-year return, 10.7 annualized, real. 11% return for 10 years running. If we see a 50% stock crash, which I think is likely, for reasons discussed in other podcasts, after that crash, the return is going to be juicy. If we fall 50%, the return is going to be 11% per year for 10 years running, most likely. That's pretty exciting stuff. On the other hand, you want to look at, today it's 19. I don't know. We could double that, I guess. We could double that, and we'd, what, be at 38? That's going to be awful, but let's plug in 38. You know, instead of dropping in half, let's say we go back to prices that applied before the crash during the insane time from 96 through 2008. Not the entire time, but 38 is sort of near the top of where it was. Well, at 38, your most likely return is a negative 0.5. So the most likely long-term return on stocks is a negative number if we go back to the price levels that applied before the crash. That's what the return predictor is all about. It's not looking into the future at all. It's looking into the past. It's saying in the past, high valuations have always generated poor long-term returns. Low valuations have always generated good long-term returns. Let's assume that the past tells us something about how stocks are going to perform in the future. And if that's so, we can use this tool to learn what our likely return is. And knowing that, we're no longer investing in the dark. We're no longer just throwing our money like at a gambling casino. We're investors. We're not speculators. We have a pretty good idea what we're going to get. And boy, does that make a difference, because if you were investing before the crash and you were listening to the quote-unquote experts from the stock selling industry, they were telling you, stay with your high stock allocation, buy and hold stocks for the long run. Timing doesn't work. And what was happening to you? You were getting frightened by a stock crash. Well, if you had used the return predictor, you wouldn't have been frightened. You wouldn't have been surprised even a little bit. I ran a quote just the other day at the Today's Passion feature at the site. I quoted a guy who said, it was the guy who wrote that book, Black Swan. And he said, there was nothing surprising about this stock crash. It wasn't unpredictable, like many people are saying. It was totally predictable for people who knew what they were doing. And look, Rob Bennett is some guy who posts on the internet. I mean, I shouldn't have an edge on people who studied investing. But in fairness, the problem is that most of the experts follow the passive investing model. And this model was discredited by Robert Shiller's research in 1981, 28 years ago. And once the passive investing model was discredited, it should have been abandoned. They held to it, I believe, for marketing reasons, because it was bringing in lots of money. It's great at hitting the emotional hot buttons of investors. It's not good at helping investors to invest successfully. And I believe we need to ditch it and move forward to the rational model. But if you had used the return predictor in the days before the crash, you would not have been surprised. You would have expected it. And that's good, because in several respects. One, you obviously would have been going with a lower stock allocation. My stock allocation was zero when stocks crashed. I didn't lose any money. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you what's possible if you inform yourself of the realities. And two, emotionally, when you know what's coming and it doesn't surprise you, you don't panic, which makes it possible to actually be a long-term investor. So many of the experts talk about investing for the long term, but they don't tell you how to do it. They just say, invest blindly in stocks, always stocks. We make big commissions on stocks. Put all your money in stocks and all your problems will go away. But it doesn't work that way. And they don't pay the bill when you lose all your retirement money. You pay it. So you've got to take care of you. You've got to educate yourself about the ABCs of stock investing. The purpose of this tool is just to take the historical data. John and I had been using it on a daily basis in discussion board discussions. And we finally said, hey, you know, we've got hundreds of articles for people to look at, but wouldn't it be great if we could sum it all up in one spot so they don't have to sort through all this? And that's what the return predictor does. It just takes hundreds of articles that report on all sorts of different aspects of what the historical data says and compacts it. And you don't even have to push a button if you're looking for today's numbers, the numbers that apply to today's valuations. You don't have to push a button. Just go to the return predictor and there's your answer. And if you want to check other valuation levels, you can do so to your heart's content. All free, no charge. I'd appreciate it if you'd send me an email if you get value out of it. I'd appreciate it if you'd post at the blog, but it's not required. So that's the idea. You need an effective valuation metric. and we tested the different valuation metrics, and we found the P10 worked the best. P10 was first recommended by Benjamin Graham in his book Security Analysis, and it's used today by most prominently by Yale professor Robert Shiller, but it's used by lots of people who know about valuations. It's not used by passive investors, but it's used by people who understand valuations. It's a much better metric than PE1, which is the more common metric, but PE1 is flawed. And if you want to know why, you can listen to a podcast I did called PE10 Rocks. But PE10 gives a better read of the true valuation level. And when you read valuations properly, they predict returns. They always have. Anyway, I can't say what's going to happen in the future with certainty, but I can tell you they always have. And I can tell you common sense tells me they always will. The idea that the price you pay for stocks won't affect your long-term return, I think, is insane. I don't think the people who believe it are insane. They're smart people and they're good people, but I compare the whole thing to when we discovered that the earth is not flat but round. People who thought the earth was flat were not insane, but their idea was very, very wrong. And if you continued believing the earth was flat long after it was discovered to be round, I do think there comes a point at which it becomes irresponsible, and I think we've reached that point in the investing realm. Valuations affect long-term returns, friends and neighbors. So says Rob Bennett. So says a lot of people, but not too many have developed tools for making use of that insight, and that's the purpose of this tool. So let me, if the purpose of this podcast is to help people, first becoming introduced to the tool. So let me mention some things that have to be mentioned. One, in order to understand how the calculator works, one question I have to answer is, why don't you give us 3 years? Why you give us 10 years? What I give you is the numbers that apply: 10 years, 20, 30, 40, 50, and 60. Why don't you give us 3 years, Rob, or 1 year, or 5 years? That's what we want to know. Well, here's something to look at if you have the calculator in front of you. What we give you is the best that we can give you. I'd love to give you 1 year numbers. The trouble is stock returns are not predictable in 1 year. It's emotion that sets stock prices in the short term, and emotions are not predictable, investor emotions. In the long term, it's economic realities that set stock prices, and economic realities are largely predictable, not totally, but largely. So basically, the answer to your question is we do the best we can. Now, something important to notice. Please look at if you have the calculator in front of you, I'm going to go back to 19. Let me plug in here 19, which is today's PE10 level, 19, which is a little on the high side. Not quite in the danger zone, but 20 is the danger zone. All right. The line for 10-year percentage returns. You'll see there's a line of numbers. The most likely number I already quoted, 3.5. But there's a best possible number. There's a lucky number. There's a most likely number that I already quoted. There's an unlucky number, and there's a worst possible number. The best possible number, what that number is the number, there's only a 5% chance that your return is going to be higher than that. So that number at today's valuations is 9.47, very appealing. But that's the best possible. You only have a 5% chance of that happening. The lucky number is a number, there's a 20% chance that your 10-year return could be higher than that. And that number is 6.5. Again, very appealing, but there's only a 20% chance. The unlucky number is a number, again, where there's only a 20% chance of your return being worse than the unlucky number, and that's 0.5. So there's a chance that over the next 10 years, your return on stocks is only going to be 0.5. Very poor. Worse than what you can get in a money market, I think. But there's only a 20% chance of that. It's not likely. The worst possible is a scenario that has only a 5% chance of coming up, and that's that you'll have a loss every year on average of 2.5. Now, the most important thing you need to notice with that list is that the range is very broad. The worst possible return is 2.5, the best is 9.5. Now, that covers a lot of territory, doesn't it? That's unfortunate. We would love to have sharper numbers. We'd love to be able to say, it's either going to be the lowest it could be. It'd be great if we could say it's going to be between 2.5 and 4.5. Most likely 3.5. but within 2 and 2.5 and 4.5. That would be a more powerful tool than we have. Unfortunately, the data doesn't permit that today. Maybe some genius is going to come along and find a better way to do it. But that's the best we can get out of the data today and still be statistically, you know, accurate. So the single greatest flaw to this calculator is probably the lack of precision. That precision, please notice, improves over time. At the 20-year mark, at the 10-year mark, the range is what? Is it 12 points? 2.5 to 9.5, yes, 12 points. At 20 years, it's 8.5 points. So that's, no, eight points. So it goes from 12 points of a range down to 8. That's a significant improvement. At 30 years, it's 4 points. So at 30 years, we could be pretty darn precise. The trouble is, you know, 30 years is far out. What you want to know are the returns that are going to apply, you know, you don't want to have to go 30 years out. So it's real nice that we can have a lot of precision at 30 years. Unfortunately, what we need is to have more precision at 10 years or less. And less than 10, John didn't feel that the numbers were good enough to even report them. But at 10, we have enough. Again, the precision is not great at 10. But if in relative terms, it is. In other words, I can't tell you exactly what the return is going to be at 10 years, but I can give you this range, and I can tell you the probabilities that apply at the different points on the range. And if you compare the returns that apply, you know, I mean, just go into the calculator, play with it, and put in a P10 level of 8, which is a low P10 level, half a fair value, and then put in a P10 level of 44, which is what applied at the top of the bubble, and see the difference. And the difference will be, at 8, the return's going to be something like 15% real per year. And at 44, it's going to be a negative number. And that's the value of this calculator. There's a range there, but the entire range is good when valuations are low. And the entire range is poor when valuations are insanely high. And when valuations are in that middle ground where they are today, a little on the high side, the range is, you know, it includes good and bad outcomes. So in the normal circumstance, the more common circumstance, you're going to have a mix of good and bad outcomes. That's not unusual. But so maybe you don't want to make any valuation changes as long as you're in that range. I mean, there's all kinds of different strategic ways to play it. One way to play it would be to say, hey, as long as I'm sort of okay with most of the returns, you know, covered, I'll stay with my, you know, say you got a 60% stock allocation, I'll stay with it. You know, at 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. But at some point, the numbers are going to get so bad that you want to change your allocation. Like in the time period from 96 through 2008, where the long-term value proposition was poor for the entire 13-year period, you got to make a change. You don't want to lose a big chunk of your retirement money fooling around with a high stock allocation at those sorts of prices. So you can use the, you know, you can, or you can try, you can say, well, I'm going to make more frequent changes. That's up to you. All I try to do is to report what we can. And then you decide, you know, are the differences sharp enough to justify an allocation change? And you can also use the other tools, like the scenario surfer can help you make that decision, and the strategy tester, if you're retired, the risk evaluator. So the other tools add to this, especially when you have judgment calls. They give more detail that may help you make a decision. But if you're looking for the overview of, you know, are stocks generally a good long-term value proposition at today's prices, this is the tool. This is the one you got to start with. This is the one that I believe every investor should look at before even putting a dollar into stocks. I truly believe that. I don't believe you should put a dollar. Some will say, well, hey, people have been investing in stocks for a long time without looking at the return predictor. Why do they need to do it now? Well, a lot of investors have gotten burned by stocks. So saying that they've invested in stocks for a long time isn't persuasive to me. The percentage that have gotten burned is far higher than it should have been, far higher than it would have been had people had this tool. And so there's just no justification. The tool's free, costs you nothing. Most people have access to the internet. You should look at it. You should please tell your friends about it. Help me out. All right, I want to give you a couple places to look. If you're trying to learn about the calculators, I say certainly listen to the podcast. You're already doing that if you're here. If you're hearing these words, read the article. There's an overview article that appears below where the calculator appears. And the calculator is at passionsaving.com, if I haven't mentioned that. Left-hand side, there's a button called Return Predictor. There are also links to other articles. Well, I mentioned John Walter Russell's site. You might want to check out, I think it'd be a good idea in any circumstance to check out John Walter Russell's site. But he does the research, and he's the statistics guy. If you're scared by numbers, like I am, his site will be a little intimidating. But he's a friendly guy. If you have questions, he will help you. And he does often present overviews of his findings, so you can figure out what the research is saying, even if you don't understand the formulas and that sort of thing. Just leave that to others. So check out John's site, earlyretirementplanninginsights.com. Another place you want to check out is Robert Shiller's site. You can find that by going to Google and plug in Robert Shiller, and you'll find his website. And there's a section of his website that has the historical data, the data itself that we work from. And I think it's good to look at over. John's work is good work. Based on everything I've ever seen, he's the most respected and most liked numbers guy in the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. He's a great guy. But if you are statistically adept, by all means, check it out yourself. That'll give you some added reassurance. I suggest that you check out a Robert Shiller article that I linked to in this description of the calculator that appears at the website underneath the calculator. The title of the Shiller article is Valuation Ratios and the Long Run Stock Market Outlook, an Update, by John Campbell and Robert Shiller. And that article, it's not mandatory that you read it, but it provides good background. Robert Shiller is the master. Basically, all the material at my site, Robert Shiller's book, Irrational Exuberance, the subtitle is A Revolutionary, New Way of Looking at Stock Investing. I believe revolution means it changes everything. And I am persuaded that Shiller's right in his revolutionary approach, which rejects passive investing. And so all the material at my site is essentially takes Robert Shiller's research and explores the practical implications. That's what the investing material at passionsaving.com is all about. So it would be helpful to read a basic article by Shiller, and that article, gives you the basics. Now, at the bottom of this page where the calculator appears, there are some articles, and they're just linked to, so they're easy to get to. One is entitled About Our Unique Investment Return Calculator. That's just real basic stuff. 10 basic questions. I hope that I'll have answered all those questions in this podcast, so you don't really need to look at it. But you can never go wrong reviewing the basics, so it wouldn't hurt to look at it again. Second, there's an article entitled The Experts Speak on the Effective Valuations on Long-Term Returns. I think this is a very powerful article. I don't want to read the whole thing, but I'll just read you one or two. This is what I do here. How many do I have? Nine experts, and I quote them on what they say about the effective valuations on long-term returns, because that's what the return predictor is all about. It tells you about the effective valuations on long-term returns. So some people who have been taken in by the passive investing gibberish, they think, well, wait a minute. I thought valuations didn't affect long-term returns. I thought stocks were always a good value proposition. Well, there's a lot of experts, even passive investing advocates, incredibly enough, who will tell you that valuations do indeed affect long-term returns. This is not just crazy Rob Bennett saying this. John Bogle. Mr. Passive Investing, here's what John Bogle says. Page 33 of his book, Common Sense on Mutual Funds. Quote, this analysis takes into account my conviction, both that the performance of individual securities is unpredictable and that the performance of portfolios of securities is unpredictable on any short-term basis. While the long-term performance of portfolios is also unpredictable, a careful examination of the past returns can establish some probabilities about the prospective parameters of return, offering intelligent investors a basis for rational expectations about future returns. Well, cut out the gobbledygook, and what our friend John Bogle is telling us there is that long-term returns are predictable. And the stock return predictor does the work for you, so you don't have to be super intelligent. You only have to be intelligent enough to find the PassionSaving.com site and click on that return predictor link, and there you are. William Bernstein, author of The Four Pillars of Investing. We've just acquired a much more valuable piece of information, the long-term expected return of the market. Think about it. Which would you rather know? The market return for the next 6 months or for the next 30 years? I don't know about you, but I'd much rather know the latter. And within a reasonable margin of error, you can. That's exactly right. There is a margin of error. You can't know it precisely, but within a reasonable margin of error, you can know the future. You can know how your stocks are going to perform. If you're only willing to look at the price level, throw this passive investing junk in a ditch and look at prices, look at valuation levels, look at P10 levels, and you will know the future. And that will make you a calmer, more rational investor. You'll escape all this emotional junk that is fostered on people who are investing in the dark, who are gambling, really. Bernstein again, the ability to estimate the long-term future returns of the major asset classes is perhaps the most important investment skill that an individual can possess. Boy, do I ever agree. I have to ask, why is it that William Bernstein advocates passive investing given that statement? You figure it out. Ed Easterling, author of Unexpected Returns. Average returns and long-term probabilities of loss do not tell the whole story. The probability of loss while owning the market over a long enough period of a time may indeed be minimal, but the probability of loss for periods of years, even decades, can vary dramatically depending on the market's level of valuation. The probability of loss may be very high when valuations are high, very low when valuations are low, and modest when valuations are average. Well, if the risk of huge loss is changing dramatically, shouldn't you be determining what that risk is before you put money on the table? Sure seems so to me. Sure seems so to me. Last one I'll give is there's more of them here. Please read them, but I'll give you Michael Alexander, the author of the wonderful book Stock Cycles. The effect of holding time on stock returns in overvalued markets like we had from 96, I'm adding, like we had from 96 to 2008. That's my editorial edition. The effect of holding time on stock returns in overvalued markets is the opposite of what it is for all markets. Normally, holding stocks for longer periods of time increases the probability that they will beat other types of investments, such as money markets. This observation led to the commonly held belief that for long-term investors, any time is a good time to invest, since the long-term trend in Figure 1 dominates over time. In the case of overvalued markets, holding for longer times, up to 20 years, does not increase the odds of success. When stocks are priced like they were from 96 through 2008, the long-term investor gets killed because the price is just not there to generate a strong long-term return, unless you're going to hold more than 30 years, which most of us can't wait 30 years to get a good return on our stock investment. So that's a quick, I did a quick hit on the article, The Experts Speak. There's another article called Benefits of Using Historical Return Data for Predicting Stock Returns. I'm not going to read from that one, but that discusses some strategy implications, which I'm going into in brief in this podcast. PE10 is an investor's best friend. That talks about PE10, the valuation metric, which if you want to know the details, you should know. Community comments on, well, there's two. Let me read these. There's one called The Famous Robert Shiller Stock Market Prediction. Now, you should know about that. It's historical value. Robert Shiller, some people say, oh, has this ever been tested, tested in real time, tested and then it withstood the test. Well, it was. But there's some controversy over whether the prediction worked or not. I say it did. More than it failed. Robert Shiller made a prediction in 96 in testimony he gave to the Federal Reserve. And he said, based on the valuation levels that apply today, this was in the summer of 96, people who hold high stock allocations are going to live to regret it within 10 years. Was Shiller proven right or was Shiller proven wrong? I say he was proven right because We went to higher valuation levels than we've ever seen in history in the late 90s, following Shiller's statement, but stock prices started downward in January of 2000. So well within that 10-year time frame, Shiller's prediction started coming true. We didn't see a big crash by 2006. That's so. But the return that we saw in 2006, while not horrible for people that were invested from 96 through 2006, it was within the range of probabilities that the return predictor would have predicted. It just happened to be on the lucky side of the range. Then in 2008, we had the big crash, and from that point, we're now not so much on the lucky side. We're more in the middle, where you would expect to be. So I think Shiller was proven correct. But in a hyper-technical sense, you could say, we didn't have a crash by 2006, so some people say that's not good enough. Well, it's good enough to tell you to lower your stock return, and if you had lowered your stock return in 96, you'd be better off today. So I think Shiller is way ahead of the quote-unquote experts who advocate passive investing. There's another article that I think is well worth reading if you have time. It's a little more lengthy. It's called Community Comments on Predicting Stock Returns. And what that article does is I took the stock return predictor into the lion's den, the Vanguard Diehards board. Well, there's some wonderful people there, wonderful, smart people there. I wanted to hear their feedback, but there are also a lot of passive investing dogmatists who are viciously abusive in their comments. And they were trying to shut down any discussion, mainly because so many community members loved hearing about this stuff. So they felt they had to shut it down or passive investing was going to get shut down. And so if you go onto that thread, what I do there, I think I provide a link to the Vanguard Diehards thread, and then I provide excerpts from some of the best comments. If you go to the actual thread, you'll read some abusive stuff, and you know, you just put on your hip boots and get through it, look for the good stuff. But the good stuff is there at my site. And in the beginning, you'll read a lot of comments from all kinds of people offering, you know, some raising caveats, which I think would be good for you to know about. And some offering, you know, highly kind comments, you know, cheering on the effort to develop these sorts of tools. At the end of that thread, after the goons got involved, a lot of people dropped off. And it was mostly comments by me and John. And some others that that are there in that thread. But a lot of those comments I thought were very interesting. I wanted to save them because they get into more the nitty gritty, not this overview that I'm giving in this podcast. So if you want to get into the nitty gritty, I would read that entire thread. It's my suggestion. I mean, you got your money at risk here, so you might as well dig a little bit. So I linked to that article there at the it's right handy with the calculator. Now, I just want to quickly go over, how the calculator works. Let me plug in again. I'm going to plug in again a P10 level of 8. Put in 7. 7 is half of fair value. Fair value is 14. We're not at 7. We haven't been at 7 since the early 1980s, long time ago. But a lot of people were shocked and amazed at the returns that people experienced in the 80s and 90s. Well, if these people had used the stock return predictor back in the early 80s, they wouldn't have been shocked and amazed at all. Look at these returns. When we're at the price levels that applied in the 1980s, and this is relevant for today, don't think it's not. We're at a 19 today, but please understand. Whenever we go to insanely high P10 levels in the past, we have always in the aftermath gone down to insanely low levels. Because what happens is people are living in fantasy world. When stocks are priced at 3x fair value, well, it's a punch in the stomach when we go down to fair value, which you have to for the market to continue to function. Well, after that punch in the stomach, guess what happens? People get sick of stocks and they sell. And it causes an economic crisis every time we've done this. And the economic crisis brings prices even lower. And we end up at a P10 level of 7 or 8. So that may be where we're going in the next 5 years. And if we get down to 7 or 8, this is the investing opportunity of a lifetime. So start thinking about it today, please. 10-year most likely return, P10 level 7, 17% real. 17, that's every year. It's not one time. That's every year for 10 years. Doesn't mean you get 17 every year. It means you average 17. Plus inflation. With inflation, you're talking 20%. That's the 10-year. The 14, the 20 years, a little lower, 14. But it's better. I mean, which is better, to have 10 years of 17% returns or 20 years of 14? I'd rather have 20 years of 14, wouldn't you? The return's slightly lower, but you're getting it for 20 years. So in 1982, stocks were just an insanely attractive asset class. That's when Business Week was putting out its cover article saying the death of equities. Get out of stocks. Stocks are finished. That's what the experts were saying. And that's what they'll be saying again, if we get there again, as I think we will. You want to go by the historical data, not the experts. Why? The experts are caught up in all the emotion of the day. They're trying to sell stocks. To sell anything, you've got to have an emotional connection with your reader. So all they're doing is pushing back at people the same emotional prejudices that we're drawn to as weak human beings. When prices are low and the long-term value proposition is amazingly great, we all want to get out of stocks. And the experts are saying, yeah, it is the death of equities. Better get out. And when prices are insane and the long-term value proposition is a negative number, they're saying, hey, can't lose with stocks. You've got to be all in stocks. You know, you're a fool if you're not in stocks. It's stocks for the long run. These numbers are objective. This is the historical data. This is the real stuff, the hard stuff. So 10-year returns and 20-year returns are just amazing. The 20-year return, we did a statistical analysis. The 20-year return you get, this is the most amazing fact of the entire 7 years of discussion in my mind, 78% predictability, according to the statistical test. The PE10 level on the day you buy stocks tells you 78% of what you need to know the return that's going to apply 20 years later. That's a high level of predictability. Now I'm going to plug in 44. And I'm going to ask you, should anybody have been surprised how stocks have performed? We were at a 44 P10 level in January of 2000. Should anyone have been surprised at what we've seen over the past 10 years? I don't think so. Most likely return at the price we were at the top of the bubble, 10-year annualized real return, negative 1%. Most likely long return was a negative number. In January of 2000, stock Treasury inflation-protected securities, risk-free asset class was providing a real return per year of 4% real. You could have locked that in for 30 years at one time. Stocks were providing a negative one, 5-point differential for 10 years running. Tips were so far superior, it can't even hardly be described. Worst possible return at the top of the bubble for 10 years running, negative 7%. That means 10 years after you bought your stocks, you would have lost 70% of your money. And that still can happen. The 10 years isn't up yet. We could have another big stock crash and you would have lost 70% of your money. So that's the downside. What the reason you want to look at this worst possible number is sometimes you want to know, can I hold for the long term? You know, they all say hold for the long term, which is good advice. But the question is, how do you do that? Well, what you have to know is what's my worst case scenario? If you don't know the worst case scenario, how can you know whether you can hold for the long term? And I've heard people on Boglehead saying, worst case scenario is a loss of 50%. No, it isn't. At some valuation, at fair value, that's the worst case scenario, not at the prices that applied from 96 through 2008. When we were at a 30, in 1929, we were at a 33 PE10. That's the highest we'd ever seen until the 90s. We suffered an 80% stock loss in real terms, 29, the years following. And we didn't suffer it all in one crash. It comes in dribs and drabs, and that's the way we're seeing it this time. So this time we went far, far, far above 33. So we could be seeing more than an 80% total. We don't know. You know, you got to go from worst to best. You know, we don't know what we're going to see. But if you want to know whether you can hold, look at the worst and then say, can I hold through this? Can I hold through 7% loss for 10 every year for 10 years running? 70% total loss. Can I hold that? And if you can't, then you need to go to a lower allocation where you can hold it. Obviously, if you only had a 10% allocation, you could hold through that. But if you have an 80% allocation, you can't. And the you know, the passive investors are just telling you, well, you know, just don't even look at it. Well, if you don't look at it, you don't know what you're doing. Rob Bennett's opinion. So that was the situation at the top of the bubble. The worst case scenario at the 20-year mark was a negative 3%. That's negative 3% real for every year for 20 years running. Could you hold if you got a negative 3 every year for 20 years and you had 80% in stocks? I don't think there's a human being alive that could hold through that. That's a worst case scenario. That's not the most likely. But you should know the worst case. When you're setting your allocation, you should know the worst case scenario. Tips were risk-free, government guarantee, and they were providing 4% real for 30 years. The worst case scenario for stocks at 30 years was 2.7 annualized real return. So you could have beat stocks soundly, even for 30 years out, in the event that a worst case scenario came up, buying an asset class with a government guarantee attached. Even the most likely scenario for stocks was 4.7, and tips were paying, you know, 4. So even at 30 years, stocks only beat tips by a little bit when you bought them at the top of the bubble. So, you know, I made my pitch, but, you know, I really think you have to look at this. And as I say, I don't like it. I don't like having the responsibility on my shoulders that this is the only calculator out there that does this. I want to see hundreds of these, because when we see hundreds of these calculators, for one thing, everyone's going to be discussing rational investing. Because once you see these numbers, you're just drawn to rational and away from passive. And so I think that's a good thing. So I'd like to see a lot of copycats. And second, the more copycats we have, the more people are going to get involved in the discussions and the more we're going to sharpen these tools. And, you know, nobody's perfect. I doubt that John and I came up with the perfect calculator on our first try. So, you know, we need a national debate to, you know, to come up with even better tools. You know, please help to the extent you can. You know, community is give and take, you know. Take the calculator, but give something back. Go to a discussion board and ask that honest posting be opened up. Go to the blog and, you know, contribute some thoughts or some good questions. People who ask questions are helping us. They're helping us learn. You know, but tell your friends about the site. Give back, please. We need that. We need that. You know, we're the underdog. We're the David. We're the little guy. I guess I want to point out today at a 19 P10 level, the most likely return for 10 years is 3.5. Please understand. That's not a, you know, you have to look at the worst case, as always. The worst case is negative 2.5. So just, you know, before you invest heavily in stocks at today's prices, they're a lot better than we were before the crash. We were never at a 19 before the crash. We never went below 25 from 96 through 2008. So we're a lot better off than we were then. But can you take 10 years of a negative 0.25? 20 years, worst case is a return of 0.26. One quarter of a point. Can you go 20 years only getting a quarter of a point a year? Average? If you can't, then you need to lower your stock allocation till you reach the point where you can. So please understand that 3.5 number might look a little enticing. Compare it with, you know, tips aren't paying that today, and I-bonds aren't, and CDs aren't. But you got to remember, stocks are a highly volatile asset class, and you might get the worst case. You don't know. We might draw a black card. And if you end up selling, you won't get the 3.5. You know, if we have another crash and it scares you, and you'll be reading lots of doom and gloom in the media if that happens. And if you sell, forget that 3.5. That's out the window if you ever sell. So you've got to have an allocation low enough so that you can hold through the worst case scenario. So please understand, to get that 3.5, I believe you'll get it, or something in that neighborhood, if you hold 10 years. But you might have a back-breaking stock crash in the interim. And if, you know, what you want to do is get your allocation where you can hold through that. And as long as you hold, you'll get the return for that percentage of your money. But if you start thinking you can go with 80%, you might end up not getting the 3.5 for anything, because you'll sell everything. You get hit so hard, that punch will be so hard. So the whole idea of investing is looking at worst case scenarios and then planning your your allocation so that it's the highest you can be without feeling pressure to sell in a worst case scenario. That's the way I would define the objective of this game. And the main thing that I do with the return predictor is, the way I look at it, and I think I'm going to close on this, is I view stocks as my high return asset class. So what I do is I compare the return in stocks to what I can get with a super safe asset class. The super safe asset classes are TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, because they have an inflation protection and they have a government guarantee. I-bonds, same thing, different tax consequences, but they have an inflation protection, they have a government guarantee. And certificates of deposit, which don't have inflation protection. But, you know, if you think you have a fix on inflation, you could go with CDs. Sometimes you get a better deal with CDs. What I do is I keep it simple, and I usually just allocate between super safe, one of those three asset classes, and stocks, which are not super safe, but which are high growth. And I basically want my allocation to be the highest in stocks that I can bear to stick with in a worst-case scenario. And the worst-case scenario changes from valuation to valuation level. So I don't change my valuation level often. But, you know, when we go from, say, you know, where we were in 75 to where we were in 96, I'm going to change my allocation because 75 was mouthwateringly great. And 96 was frighteningly bad. 96 all the way through 2008. And from 2008 forward, September of 2008 forward, we're better. We're in a better spot than we were, but the emotion in the market is still high, and the risk of another crash is high. And so I would say we're in a better situation today than we were before the crash, for sure. No question about it. But not an exciting time to hold stocks. So I was going with a 0% allocation before the crash. And I think it makes sense for most investors. You have to look at your individual circumstances. But I think it makes sense for most investors to be invested in stocks today, but not heavily invested. And you have to look at things like, you know, how much did you lose in the crash? Because if you lost a lot, the odds that you're going to be able to hold through another crash are not so good. You know, if you were out of stocks and you only got in after the crash, well, you're in a much better situation. I'm just gonna quickly look through my notes and see if there's anything I've missed. I guess there's a podcast you may want to listen to. I think it would be good to listen to. I list my favorite podcasts. You can look at all the podcasts. You can go to the Robcast section of the site, or you can see my favorites. And I have a widget on the right-hand side of the homepage for the blog called Favorite Podcast or Favorite Robcast. And there's one in there called something like, what's it called? I better look it up. It's basically the downside of valuation-informed indexing. And I think it gives 10 caveats, you know. I'm a big believer in using the stock return predictor, and I'm a big believer in changing your allocation in response to big price changes. But there's no strategy that's perfect in this world. And so I think it makes all the sense in the world to know the downsides of anything you're getting into. So I recorded a podcast, and there's also an article at the site that gives 20 of them. I was only able to fit 10 into the podcast, but I just want to give the title of that podcast in case there's somebody out there looking to find it. Let me see here. Favorite Robcast. Okay, we're getting close. Let me see here what I can do. The Case Against Valuation-Informed Indexing. So that's the podcast, and there's also an article at the site with that title. You can find it if you look through the investing sections. And that'll give you all the downsides of valuation-informed indexing. And I think it's smart to look at that before you go ahead with anything because, you know, you might talk yourself out of it, which is good. If you're going to talk yourself out of it, you're better to talk yourself out of it before you're playing with real money. So that's a good idea. But if you don't talk yourself out of it, you'll at least know, you'll know any weaknesses in the strategy before you go forward, at least any I've identified. And, you know, that way, they, you know, things will happen, won't surprise you, you know. Like, for example, when Shiller gave that 10-year number, it would have been better if everybody knew that, you know, in 10 years, it might not be so terrible. We might end up on the lucky side, but that sooner or later you're going to regret, you know, being in stocks at the price levels that applied in 96. So I think, you know, again, I think Shiller was right on the big point and perhaps wrong on the small point, but he was right about something a lot more important than the thing he was wrong on. So that's the stock return predictor. I'm going to do podcasts in future days that will give similar overviews for the other calculators at the site. I hope you use the calculator, and please, if you do use it, I sure would be grateful. One, if you would tell your friends, and two, you know, if you have questions about it or comments about it, good or bad, I learn from both. Please send me an email. Go to the Contact Rob section of the site. At the left-hand side of every page, you'll see a button. Yeah, down near the bottom called Contact Rob. Please send me your thoughts. Good luck with your investing strategies.